This week's mailbag comes to us from iTunes. I don't know how I found this podcast, but I am so glad that I did. Lisa is down to earth and realistic. She is not about Pinterest organization. She talks about being organized for you and your needs and where you are. Some days when I listen, I think, how does she know this is how I feel? I wished she had been around when my kids were little. She reminds me that I am not broken and to give myself grace. Do you have an Organized 365 success story? We would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at lisa@organized365.com and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organized 365.
Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. Oh my goodness, I have an exciting big announcement. It's actually our biggest announcement of 2019. We have payment plans. The number one request coming into my email is, can you please create a plan for me? I want to get started. I just don't have the funds right now. Can you please make a plan for me? And we have. For just $96 a month, you can now join us in the next round of the 100-day home organization program that starts May 13th. And for those of you who want the whole kit and caboodle, we have an all-access payment plan starting at $186 a month. Head on over to organize365.com right now to check out all the packages and plans. And now, on with the show. I received this email the other day and I asked permission to share it here on the podcast. And it had me in tears when I was reading it. It's a little long. Let me read it to you and then I will give you my thoughts. The topic is, all I ever wanted to be was a mom. Lisa, have you ever had a week, maybe even almost a month, where you just can't keep your own thoughts from running you over? It's been rough lately. When I was a kid, all I ever wanted to be was a wife and a mom. Not the 1950s stay-at-home and dote-on-your-husband kind of wife, but the happy and healthy wife who loves her home and the peace she bestows on the ones she loves the most. I do not live in peace. My husband is a police officer. He's been tackled, hurt, and even had a hatchet thrown at him the night before Thanksgiving. Our boys are not typical. Our oldest was born with a very rare disease and will most likely not make it to 18. Each time he gets a cold or any type of illness, it can cause brain damage. He has spent a good portion of his life in the hospital as we fight to give him the best chance he has. We try to give him the most normal quality of life while he is home. Last year, we agreed to send him to public school where he blossomed with a whole class full of friendships. He's amazing. Unfortunately, his body wasn't able to handle the germ overload that schools are, and it became a danger for him to continue. He was so sick, so often, he missed 65% of school days before we decided to pull him. Once we did, he slowly started regaining his strength, and now we have a great balance where he receives services at his school for a couple of hours a few days a week, and we could still be a part of the class a bit. But most of his academics come from me homeschooling. I also have twins. I call them my twinions after the Minions movie because they are nonverbal and oh so active and mischievous. They are boys through and through. They are now 4.5, and I'm going to tell you why I'm writing this big long email to you. I've already said it's been hard. What has gotten me through this is listening to podcast 261, which was my personal transformation journey, and reading the chapter in your mindset book about your accumulation phase. You are honest and forthcoming in these pieces. It's real life. It's my life. Some may read and listen to these differently, but I see someone who has been through what I'm going through, still smiling, still moving forward in dreams of her own, unapologetically, shouting from the rooftops that she, me, is still a woman beyond being a mother. I'm going to stop for a minute and tell you that her writing this to me, when I was going through that, I was not. But now when I'm relating it to you, I realize that's what I was doing. So that's so awesome to see. I've had horrible thoughts lately. All I wanted to be was a mom. The mom in playgroups and coordinating events for the PTO, showing off how cute and smart and talented her children are. I wanted to be the normal mom experience. I'm not that mom. I'm the mom who struggles to take her sweet, precious babies to a store just to get milk and strawberries, only they keep that stuff in the back of the store and on opposite sides of each other, and it takes 25 minutes of screaming and crying from all of us just to get milk and strawberries. I've missed out on posting milestones on Facebook and shooting videos of first soccer games because we haven't been given the chance to experience those. Yet I'm realizing through your two pieces of work that there will be those times. I cried when you emphasized that delayed children are simply that. It just takes longer to get these phases of memories and milestones. That just because I feel like I've been going through the terrible twos for 3 years, my sweet boys are progressing. They will play soccer when their coordination and mental ability gets there. They will have milestones of first experiences. Until I read about and listened to someone else's story about it all, I had lost hope. You say sometimes that you worry about what's yours to share. Your children are growing up, and the more public you become, the more they can be under the microscope. You not only want to shelter them from that, but you also want to shelter the handicaps placed on special needs kiddos that the public has no clue how capable and truly amazing they are. You don't just erase this critical part of your story. Find a way to make this part of your journey about the mothering so you valiantly conquered and are now on top at the end of the mountain so I can shout to those further down and we can keep climbing. You're never done raising your kids, but you've made it through beautifully, the part that so many of us feel hopeless over, like it's never going to end. Moms like me need your voice. We need that natural optimism and true faith, and that these babies are their mommies for a reason. We are capable. I would never give up. Moms like us always find a way to keep powering through. Just remember that it's voices like yours that give us the power when our batteries are beyond drained. I just had to pour my heart out to you because of how much you've helped me find myself in ways I didn't know existed. Who knew that a woman I never met would influence me so much? Thank you. So thank you for sending that email. At the time of this recording, I'm recording this early. I just finished recording the Warrior Mama Masterclass, which is available on replay. You can go to organize365.com/masterclass and you can watch it there. And in there, I tell the story of how our kids started to get their diagnosis and how I was able to go from a mom who listened to everybody else who had opinions about how I should parent and educate and all of those things, to a warrior mama, which means managing all medical alternatives, where I believe that these children are my children and I am uniquely their mother, and that we all are the mother our children need. And maybe that's all I need to say. You are the mother that your children need. That's it. And however it works out and whatever you decide to do or don't do or can afford or can't afford or hear about or learn about on time or not on time, it's all meant to happen as it happens. You're in the right place at the right time with the right children, and it is not easy. It is not easy. And I share a lot, but I can't share everything on the podcast. I share a lot more in person. Because it isn't my children's story isn't my story, but my mothering story is my mothering story. And I'm just like you. Although I did want to be the 1950s housewife. Oh my gosh, Greg and I joke that we should have been born in the 50s. I did all I wanted to be was a wife and mother and a stay-at-home wife and mother. That is all I ever wanted to be. And the hardest part of mothering for me was stepping into and owning the mother my children needed me to be, not the mother I thought I would be. And for me, that meant adoption, not birth. And I've told this story, it's been a long time. When we got married and then we started having kids, and we did Clomid, the, you know, just regular, where they try to make more eggs, and I did. I made more eggs. We have unexplained infertility because I'm supposed to have the kids I have, FYI. So we were getting to the point where you do, where they make the baby in the petri dish and then they put it in you. I always forget what these are called. Anyway, we were getting ready to do that step. And it was like $10,000 at the time. And it was also $10,000 to adopt. And I'm a practical person. And I'm like, well, you have adoption, you have a baby at the end. I didn't realize that adoptions fall through, FYI. but you do this other one for $10,000 and you don't get a baby. You got to do it again for $10,000. So we, Greg and I, went to a couples marriage retreat at Billy Graham's Training Center down in Asheville, North Carolina. And I thought we were going to hear the singer Chapman, but we were hearing Bill and Annie Chapman, and they are like marriage counselors or whatever. So they got on stage and they go, there are always a few young people in the audience that thought they were coming to hear, you know, Gary Chapman, but no, the singer, but we are actually the people. And Greg looks at me. Now we're at Billy Graham's Training Center, which there's like, there was no Wi-Fi at that time, but like there's no TV there. You're on a mountain, people. Billy Graham's mountain. And you're there for religion. So we were there. It was totally fine. We loved the whole experience. But they have a chapel that is, and there's a cross at the very top of the mountain. And when you're in the chapel and you're in the prayer room, you're directly under the cross. And so Greg and I were in there. I think Greg was outside. I was in there and they were praying for me to get pregnant, of course, because always my prayer so I could get pregnant. And as I was leaving there, I heard God audibly say to me, do you want to be pregnant or do you want a baby? And I was like, what? He said, do you want to be pregnant or do you want a baby? And I was like, I want a baby. Like, I want a baby. And I said to Greg, I said, we're going to adopt. So we decided on the way home, we drove there and back. So it was an 8-hour drive that we were going to adopt. And by the end of the week, I had everything in. And 4 months later, we got Joey. The interesting thing is my mother journals. And the last time we had done the artificial insemination was 9 months before Joey was born. So see, he's my kid. I'm just telling you, he's my kid. So anyway, I've always wanted to be a mother. And along the way, you have to make these decisions. Do you want to get pregnant or do you want to have a baby? You know, like, do you want to have your idyllic picture of what a Christmas card is supposed to look like? Or do you want to just stop doing Christmas cards altogether because it's too much stress? It's too much stress. I like to send a Christmas card and a letter. And when I can no longer write the letter, I stop doing the card. And now, this year, we started again because Greg couldn't stand it anymore. And we sent a New Year's picture. And with a New Year's picture, you know what you never send? A Christmas letter. I'm just telling you, that's real life. Those Christmas letters, I love reading every single one I get. The reason you don't get one from me is because I don't want to relive the year in writing. Like, I just, all those things that you put in your Christmas letter, I don't have. And the real bummer of it is, because I do believe that there is delayed and they do catch up, the problem is society moves on and they don't allow for the delay caught up time. If you are not ready to play soccer intramurally by third grade, there is no more intramural option when you developmentally and intellectually catch up to the whole group sports thing. There is no more, let's just go play soccer in fifth grade. Like, by third grade, you're on the teams, and then you're to select teams, and then you're traveling around the world, and you're getting the gold trophy for soccer. Like, our children, if they are not proficient at these social activities by third grade, there is no more playing. It's really sad. I don't know how to fix it. It does bother me, so I think about it. Because the quantity of children, they're being left out of all of these normal activities is not just a few children. I would venture to say it's 25 to 30%, maybe even 50%. I'm not joking. By the time a delayed child is ready for whatever they were delayed from, that activity no longer exists. For example, summer camp. Summer camp. If your child is not sports inclined, good luck to you finding a summer camp. If they're not intellectually gifted and they're going to do like robotics and all that kind of stuff, or they love sports and they're going to do sports camps, it is extremely, extremely difficult to find a camp for your grade school and middle schooler to go to, and impossible to find a camp for your high school child who's delayed. So that means they're more like a middle school or late grade school age mentally, but now they're in high school. There's no camp for them to go to, but they're intellectually and delayed ready for that middle school camp now, but they've aged out of it. So now they're home with you and they don't have friends, FYI. Most of these children don't have friends. So it's not like they're just playing outside with friends. They've missed the boat on intramural sports and all that. They're not at the robotics camps. What do you do with them? So then mom becomes camp counselor trying to figure out what to do. So then what you actually do is you find activities that are for 3, 4, 5 years younger than your kids are, and you try to recreate that in your backyard while you're drowning in all the bills and all the everything. I mean, this woman is homeschooling her children, right? Well, I mean, you do whatever your kids need, but if her kids were in school or able to be in school, then what would she do? Maybe a part-time job, maybe a hobby, maybe a volunteer, but that's not an option to her because she is at home with her children. It's not an option. I'm not saying that we need a pity party or anything if we need to be home for our children, but I will tell you 100% the reason I work from home is because I can't not. I can't not work from home. I tried it. I made it 18 months. That's how long I made it. It was not good for our entire family. It was not worth it. It was more worth it for me to come home and us not to have the income and do more of the couponing and stuff like that. Because just the physical presence of me being in the house, even if I'm not with anybody, calms everyone's anxiety level. I don't know how to explain anxiety. Anxiety is the big thing that is impacting children today and families today. And just having a mom in the house lowers the anxiety level. I'm teaching Abby, I told you this, I'm teaching her to say, what's the worst that can happen? This backfired on me, you guys. She said the other day, when I'm 18, I'm getting a tattoo. I'm like, no, you're not. Yes, I am. Then she looks at me, she goes, what's the worst that could happen? I was like, darn it. Greg said something the other day. I don't remember what it was. The other thing I always say is, you're fine. You're fine. Because when the kids were younger, I would react. Like if a bee would come at me, I'd be like, oh, a bee. Ah! And I was afraid of bees. So because I was afraid of bees, the kids picked up on this and they became terrified of bees. Great. I have not had flowers planted in my yard for years because my kids are afraid of bees. And you know what bees like? Flowers. So I got rid of everything possible that I could that flowers other than the trees. So I realized when they were younger that if I reacted, they then would become afraid of whatever I was afraid of. And so I quickly learned that I was no longer afraid of anything. Bring me the spider. Let me catch the stink bug. I will kill the wasp. And I just pretend like I'm not afraid. I'm terrified, FYI. And I'm just like, nobody else is going to do it. So I'm going to have to do it. I mean, I can't just stand here on top of a chair. Then this spider lives in the house and I don't live in the house. So gone, done, move it out. My kids have some serious medical issues, like some serious things that could be life-threatening. You know what is worse than someone having an asthma attack that could be life-threatening? The mother freaking out about it and causing even more panic. Because you know what you should do if you have asthma? Calm down, drink water, and get to a doctor, not hyperventilate. So I quickly realized that if I just said, what's the worst that can happen? You're fine. Like, and also one of my children is a hypochondriac. So I always say, you're fine. And then I assess. I also learned from a doctor early on, especially since we have so many like non-testable ailments. Like if you have asthma and they're wheezing, clearly they're wheezing. But if you have anxiety, how do you measure anxiety? So I learned a lot of things through observation. I would use supplements and I could tell with supplements if it was reducing anxiety, all those kind of things. And a doctor told me when my kids were younger that they don't even go by how high the temperature is or how long the symptoms have been going on. They go with how the child is acting. So if the child is acting fine, even if they have 103 degree fever, they feel much better about that child than a child that has been lethargic and hasn't been doing anything and they have 100 degree fever. Like, you look at how the child's acting, not what the number says on the thermometer or anything else. So when my kids are saying, you know, I'm dying, I always say, you're fine. And then I, you know, feel their forehead. I never take the temperature because then they go, look, see, it's 100. I'm dying. I look at them and then I observe, have they been eating? Have they been going to the bathroom? Have they been on their phone and watching TV? Seem to be just fine. Or have they been sleeping for 3 days and now they're saying that they can't do this? So for example, when Abby hurt her back, she has 2 disc herniations. It's a big, huge deal. We went to therapy for like a year. She told me her back was hurting. And then a couple days later, my back is hurting. And I was like, oh, that's the second time. And then when they start saying something, I start noting, not writing it down. I have a pretty good memory for this kind of stuff. And I note how often they say it, when they say it, if they're trying to get out of something when they're saying it. And that's when I said to Greg, we've got a big problem with her back. He's like, why? I said, trust me. And he's like, no, we don't. No, we don't. Mm-hmm. So I went to the specialist. They're like, you have a big problem with her back. I was like, I knew it. So as a mom, trust your mom gut. And just know when it's the right time and when it's not. But when you have non-typical, whatever the heck that is, children, everything's an issue. You know what I mean? Like listen to the story I just read. 800 things are an issue. So again, do my kids do laundry? Yep. They learned last summer when they were 16 and 18. Have my kids ever done the dinner dishes ever? Nope, never. They don't even clear the table. Not a battle I was going to pick. Pick your battle. Here's the other thing. Spoiler alert. There are no cameras in your house. Nobody has any idea what you're doing. Don't like hurt your kids or anything. But I'm just saying, nobody knows. You didn't know my kids didn't do dishes. You did know my kids didn't do laundry because I told you, but I've never told you about the dishes. Like, I don't know what chores you think my children are doing. The only chores my children have ever been expected to do is clean their room, and it's not always every weekend. Usually every weekend, though, because they can't handle it if it gets more out of whack, and then their anxiety gets out of whack, and then I can't handle it. And I need a certain level of organization around here so I can function and I could be the even keel. So Greg and Abby were talking the other day in the kitchen. I can't remember what happened. And Abby said, you're fine, to Greg. And he's like, all right. And I was standing there. He looks at me. I said, yeah, you're fine. And they said, you always say that, but we also know that if anything was wrong, you would actually really take care of it. And Greg says to me, it is so comforting to me that you always tell me I'm fine. You're fine. And then I observe, like when he goes, I'm having a panic attack. I'm like, you're fine. Take more GABA, take more of this. And I note. Like, I do note, I'm the mom, I'm taking care of it, but panicking everyone is not going to solve it. So all I guess I want to say on this is, I hear you, I believe you, I will keep sharing pieces of my story. You're not alone. I don't know what's going to come out of this, and I don't feel that it is something that I'm going to birth. I think it's something that one of you, once you get organized enough, are going to birth, and I cannot wait to help you with it. But the amount of children that qualify for IEPs now is drastically larger than when I first started teaching and when I was in school. I mean, I don't have statistics on it. I just know that's a fact. You can find out your details wherever you want. But I look around and I look at my friends and I look at the workload on the kids and what is expected. You know what's really, really helped me with this? Is I have been listening to a lot of biographies of like past presidents or like past business owners. And, you know, they go to Harvard, Yale, Princeton, all that, whatever. But what it was back then and what it is today are two totally different things. When I went through, because I still had some of my schoolwork from when I was in first and second grade, you know what I was doing? Learning how to write letters. Like, I was not reading chapter books and writing reports that they are in second grade. Like, what we do now at such lower levels in school is insane. It's insane. And I'll be honest with you, in our homeschooling that we're doing, In the state of Ohio, I make the rules for what we do for graduating around here, and there are no standards. And if you're not going to a four-year college where you need an ACT and a transcript about four different years of math, guess what? You don't have to take 4 years of math. Just saying. That a lot of kids today cannot tell time on an analog clock, you know, the one with the hands on it. A lot of kids today cannot count money. A lot of kids today don't know how to balance a checkbook. What are some other basic math skills I would say that we don't have? But yet we think that every child that graduates from high school should have Algebra 2. I'm just saying, I've never used Algebra 2. I love algebra because it's like a puzzle, but I was a teacher and I never needed this skill that you had to learn in high school before you could even go to the four-year college. So if you have a child that's not going to go to a four-year college, and they're basically carrying a computer around in their pocket, do they really need to know Algebra 2? Do they really need to know, you know, all of the dates that are in history? Or would it be better, like Abby and I traveled around the United, not United States, around Ohio. We have 8 presidents in the state of Ohio. We've been to 5 of their homes. We learned about all the first wives of the presidents in the state of Ohio. What else did she do with the presidents? There was something else. Really cool stuff about the presidents. She knows a lot about presidents now, and she loves going through the homes. And we found out, you know, a lot of interesting historical stuff as we went through all of the homes of the presidents in Ohio, because most of them were in the mid-1800s to early 1900s. So then we started diving into that part of history, which is just fun, which is just history, which I loved learning as much as she did, maybe more. I love learning. School is about loving learning and finding out what you're uniquely gifted at and then going out and getting a vocation that you can do to live independently so that you can give back to society. School is not about taking a certain amount of classes, getting a certain grade so that you could be compared to everybody else and get exactly what everybody else has. Don't we all want to be unique and individual? Isn't that what's celebrated in the United States? Yet we think that all kids should graduate at 18 from high school with these exact credits. If we didn't carry around a computer in our pocket, maybe, but I don't think that's where we're going in the future. And so I really, my other big thing about this, if you have kids on IEPs or delayed or not running on this natural track, what are we doing here? Like what, when I really looked at the high school for Abby and what was left, could I have taught that high school curriculum? Absolutely. Could she have learned it? Maybe. Would it have benefited her anxiety, her back, our relationship? No. Would it have helped her in her future vocation? Absolutely not. She will use none of that. But the fact that I took her reading for junior year, and it is not whatever they teach in junior level reading in the public school, FYI, if you follow her IEP, they weren't going to get through half that stuff anyway. It's not like they were going to cover it and I'm not covering it. Instead, what I decided to do was, since it's been, I don't know, 6 years since a child read a book cover to cover, I decided that this year for English, we were going to read. Novel concept. That is a lifelong skill, being able to pick up a book, read it. Vocabulary, we went through 3 years worth of vocabulary. They were not high school level years of vocabulary. She has hugely increased her vocabulary, which would be speech on her IEP. We read all of the American Girl series. All the American, you know, the American Girl that you go to Chicago for and you get the doll. There are books that go along with that and they follow American history. And she read all of those books. So we learned about everything in American history, which led great into our president's thing. And now she is reading real life diaries of people like Cleopatra and Anastasia and all those people. She reads one book a week. Now she reads one book a week. That is my English curriculum. And she writes a, you know, one-page paper at the end of the week, like, I don't know, 20 sentences about the book. And then here's a news flash for you. We talk about the book. Like when we're driving, she's excited about some of these people she's read about. And she tells me about their life. And we have a conversation. And to me, with her disabilities, with where we're going vocationally, with education, you know what? She's liking school. She's liking what she's learning. She's having fun. No, We're not doing what every other junior is doing, but she's smiling more this year than she's smiled in the last 12 years of her life. And that is priceless. I guess the only thing I want to say is you are the mom or parent for your child. You are uniquely created to be that parent. So don't let society's expectation and what everyone else is doing change how you view your child, your relationship with your child, and what your child needs. Own it. Own what your child needs, research it, figure it out, give it to them, and help them be the best, independent, contributing member of society they can be as an adult. Whatever that looks like, you go for it. You got this. And I'm right there behind you.